Sahihi
Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastumavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivastari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 26. Chapter 43. Krishna kills the elephant Kuvalaya Pita. Pratigya. Krishna appears differently to different people. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter tells how Lord Krishna killed the lordly elephant Kuvalaya Pita. How Krishna and Balaram entered the wrestling arena, and what Krishna said to the wrestler Chanura. After finishing their early morning rituals, Krishna and Balaram heard kettle drums heralding the start of the wrestling match. And they went to see the festivities. At the gate of the wrestling area, they encountered an elephant named Kuvalaya Pita, who attacked Krishna at the urging of his keeper. The mighty elephant grabbed at Krishna with his trunk, but the Lord struck back and then disappeared from the beast's sight among his legs. Enraged at not being able to see Krishna, Kuvalaya Pita sought him out with his sense of smell and seized him. But the Lord pulled loose. In this way, Krishna teased and tormented Kuvalaya Pita, finally yanking out one of his tucks and beating him and his keepers to death. Sprinkled with the elephant's blood and carrying one of the tusks on his shoulders as a weapon, Lord Krishna appeared unprecedentedly beautiful as he entered the wrestling arena. There, the various classes of people saw him in different ways according to their specific relationship with him. When King Kamsa heard how Krishna and Balaram had killed Kuvalaya Pita, he realized they were invincible and became filled with anxiety. The members of the audience, on the other hand, became joyful as they reminded one another about the Lord's amazing pastimes. The people declared that Krishna and Balaram must be two expansions of the Supreme Lord Narayana, who had descended into the house of Vasudeva. Chanura then stepped forward and challenged Krishna and Balaram to wrestle, saying, King Kamsa wished to see such a match. Krishna replied, although we are merely nomadic forest folk, we are nevertheless subjects of the king. Thus, we will not hesitate to please him in an exhibition of wrestling. As soon as Chanura heard this, he suggested that Krishna should wrestle with him and Balaram should wrestle Mustika. Shloka Nisharana, verses 1 to 14. Lord Krishna killed the lordly elephant Kuvalaya Pita. 15 to 30, Krishna appeared differently to each type of spectator. 31 to 40, discussions between Krishna and Chanura. Verses 1 to 14, Krishna killed the lordly elephant, Kuvalaya Pita. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, O chastiser of enemies, Krishna and Balaram, having executed all necessary purification, then heard the kettle drums resounding at the wrestling arena. And they went there to see what was happening. When Lord Krishna reached the entrance of the arena, he saw the elephant Kuvalaya Pita blocking his way at the urging of his keeper. Securely binding up his clothes and tying back his curling locks, Lord Krishna addressed the elephant keeper with words as grave as the rumbling of a cloud. Footnote 14. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, it was proper to completely bind his locks, since in killing the wicked there should be nothing blocking his face, and thus the demons would derive benefit from seeing his beauty. Yeah, so for Krishna, it's not a matter of he has to move the hair from his face so that he can, otherwise he might have difficulty. No, Krishna will never have difficulty. This is so the benefit the demons get by clearly seeing his face. Lord Krishna said, "O driver, driver, move aside at once and let us pass. If you don't, this very day I will send both you and your elephant to the abode of Yamaraj." Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Krishna addressed the elephant keeper twice in order to make clear his determination or to express his anger. He spoke to indicate that blocking the road was a great offense. "Move off the road immediately, apakrama. I will send you to the abode of death." Present tense is used to indicate the near future, right? Because with present tense, it means just what's past or just what's about to happen. Does that make sense? You know, if you're coming in and you haven't put anything in the pot yet, but you're just about to, someone asks you what you're doing and you say, "I'm cooking." Technically, you haven't started cooking. But because it's just about to happen, then it's still called present tense. Does that make sense? Otherwise, then if you wanted to be very nitpicky, present tense is 1/11th of a second and everything else is future or past. So that's not going to work out so well, you know, maybe if you're a cyborg or something. But otherwise, then it needs to be just what's immediately happening. Just immediately happened in the past or future. The other meaning of yama sadhanam is that which is produced, asadhyate, by control of the mind, yama. This indicates liberation, right? So sending them to the abode of Yamaraj means that they will leave their body, but the other meaning is that they would attain liberation. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, "Thus threatened, the elephant keeper became angry. He goaded his furious elephant, who appeared equal to time, death, and Yamaraj, into attacking Lord Krishna." So he would be a war elephant. So probably of war elephants, he was the war elephant that he had. You know, so he was the best of them. So they actually get there, they like to fight, they're crazy. That's the main thing. And so then the elephant trainers also then have that same crazy mood. Otherwise, how do you sit on top of one of those elephants? Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, "He instigated the elephant to catch Krishna. The elephant is described as being like Yamaraj, who brings an end to life through the force of time, Kalantaka. However, Krishna is the master of time, which is stronger than the elephant. Thus, the elephant and his trainer could do no harm to Krishna." By using this phrase, Sukadev was comforting fearful Parikit, because he might get worried about what happened. Right? So then he's established that, no, you don't have to worry, because he's like time, but he is the Lord of time. Right? Yamaraj is death personified, but he, death personified, fears him. He's the Lord of Yamaraj. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, "The Lord of the elephants charged Krishna and violently seized him with his trunk." See, because in the Vedic sense, you have the emotion that's there. So you don't want that emotion to go in a direction that's unfavorable. Right? So it's not a problem to actually reveal information about what's going to happen. But at the same time, you don't reveal so much at that time that there's no interest in what's happening. So this balance is very important. Right? So sometimes nothing is given, so you don't even know what's happening when it does happen. Or they'll explain so much that there's no point in it happening. You understand? So there has to be this balance. You know, so he knows that everything will be all right, but he hasn't told him how it'll be all right. Right? Because Kshatriyas enjoy a good fight. But when he knows that Krishna will be safe, then it's fun to watch the fight. Or hear about the fight. But if you think Krishna's in danger, now that's going to be a problem. That's going to be an anxiety. This makes sense? Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Lord of the elephants charged Krishna and violently they seized him with his trunk. But Krishna slipped away, struck him a blow, and disappeared from his view among his legs." Right? So that means he's a very big elephant if you can stand under the elephant. Right? But we see these war elephants are big, because like a Bhima can go under an elephant. Right, and in the battle, it doesn't say he had to get down on his hands and knees and then slowly crawl under the elephant. No, he could walk straight under the elephant. So how big are these elephants? Right, they're very, very big. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, "With his trunk, the elephant seized the waist of Krishna, who was standing there fearlessly. When Krishna struck the elephant on his trunk with his left fist, The elephant released Krishna. Krishna disappeared between his four huge legs. First he would hide behind one leg, and when the elephant used his sense of smell to detect him, Krishna would hide behind another leg, right? Because they would stick their nose down there and try to find, because he's going to, that's how they grab you, is with their nose, but they smell you with their nose. So then he's looking around like that. In this way, playful Krishna cheated the elephant in many ways and showed to the public his remarkable daring. Because he wait there while he goes, and when he figures it out, then he moved to the next leg. Then he has to figure out, because he's under his legs, he can't see. It's not like the elephant couldn't look under him, you know, hey, what's, they don't, that's not their, how you say, specialty. It's not like cats or something, you know. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. Infuriated at being unable to see Krishna, the elephant sought him out with his sense of smell. Once again, Kuvalayapida seized the Lord with the end of his trunk, only to have the Lord forcefully free himself. Footnote 15. According to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, not being able to see Krishna, the elephant detected him with his sense of smell and seized Krishna with his trunk again. With a desire to display his feats to the public and encourage the elephant to fight, Krishna allowed himself to be caught by the elephant's trunk. When the elephant thought he was successful, Krishna with great force free himself, saying, "What kind of strength are you showing?" and escape. Right? Because he wants the elephant to, you know, make his endeavor, because otherwise what's the fun of fighting with an elephant if the elephant's not making an effort? So then the elephant makes this effort, and then he gets caught, but once he gets caught, and elephants are strong, then he shows how, you know, he gets away. So actually, how strong is it? So that'll just get the elephant more angry. Lord Krishna then grabbed the powerful Kuvalayapida by the tail and playfully dragged him 20 bow lengths as easily as Garuda might drag a snake. So 25 bow lengths will be 25 times 6. Right, so that's 150 feet, you know, which will be, yes. So, you know, it's not a small distance, right? Big monster elephant dragging by the tail. I'm sure that was not very comfortable for the elephant, right? Because they're so big and he's being dragged by his tail. Yeah. Just as Garuda might drag a snake. As Lord Achyuta held on to the elephant's tail, the elephant tried to twist away to the left and to the right, making the Lord swerve in the opposite direction, as a young boy would swerve when pulling a calf by the tail. Right, so he'd do that, and then Krishna would have fun. You know, just it'd be like when he would, as a child, grab the tails of the calves. Then they would pull them around, and so as you go this way and that way, so you know, for Krishna, then it's some fun. That Krishna then came face to face with the elephant and slapped him and ran away. Kuvalayapida pursued the Lord, managing to touch him again and again with each step. But Krishna outmaneuvered the elephant and made him trip and fall. Krishna dodged about. He playfully fell on the ground and quickly got up again. The raging elephant, thinking Krishna was down, tried to gore him with his tusks, but struck the earth instead. Footnote 16. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, in order to play in a different way, Krishna let go of the elephant's tail. Krishna struck the elephant lightly because if he killed the elephant, his play would be finished. Right, so the slap was not so much. After striking the elephant, he quickly ran away, but lessened his speed to encourage the elephant. He first showed his speed to the elephant, which was done without effort by Krishna. When the elephant began to touch him, he stumbled as if tired of running, and made the elephant fall on the ground. Krishna let the elephant touch him to encourage the elephant. Otherwise, he would have given up and run away, and Krishna would not have had much fun. So he's just doing, because the elephant thinks he can do, but if the elephant sees this person is so much more powerful, then he'll get afraid. So he just shows him just enough, you know, brings up his anger, but encourages him enough so that he'll endeavor. So he just creates this balance between these two, right? Attacking him enough to that he'll get angry, you know, that he sees that there's a formidable foe, but not enough that he'll think that he's too great a foe. His prowess foiled, the lordly elephant, Kuvalayapida, went into a frenzied rage out of frustration. But the elephant keepers goaded him on, and he furiously charged Krishna once again. The Supreme Lord, killer of the demon Madhu, confronted the elephant as he attacked. Seizing his trunk with one hand, Krishna threw him to the ground. Lord Hari then climbed onto the elephant with the ease of a mighty lion, pulled out a tusk, and with it killed the beast and his keeper. So it appears there was more than one, because they have that hood on the back, so you can put many people in there. Yeah, so he threw him on the ground and then went on top of him, like the elephant. Lions will jump on top of the elephant, you know, on their back. And then after that, pulled out his tusk, and then... Verses 15 to 30. Krishna appeared differently to each type of spectator. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued. Leaving the dead elephant aside, Lord Krishna held on to the tusk and entered the wrestling arena. With the tusk resting on his shoulder, drops of the elephant's blood and sweat sprinkled all over him, and his lotus face covered with fine drops of his own perspiration. The Lord shone with great beauty. My dear King, Lord Baladev and Lord Janardhan, each carrying one of the elephant's tusks as his chosen weapon, entered the arena with several cowherd boys. Right, so then Krishna took the tusk that he killed him with, and Balaram took the other tusk, and then they walked in. So elephant tusk can be quite big, so we can imagine a war elephant, how big the tusk is. You know, you could be talking quite a few meters here. And so then they're walking in with that on their shoulders. So that's very serious. No one would want to, you know. Yes, you know, how did they get that? It wasn't that they spent all day trying to get that out. You know, they just pulled it, put it on their shoulder, walk into the arena. Entered the arena with several cowherd boys. Various groups of people in the arena regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his elder brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person, the cowherd men as their relative, the impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the Bhojas as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in verse 17, to verse 17 in Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 96. All forms of Bhagavan are not worshipped or realized by all. Each form is attained only by qualified persons, since he is infinite in form and not suitable for all. Because any one particular form is not suitable for everyone, because every person approaches Krishna in a particular way. They have a particular concept of who he is. And therefore, accordingly, then that form matches and he reciprocates with that form. Does this make sense? So why didn't he show this or why didn't he show that? Because that's not how people see him.
Right.
Yes.
But in a sense, we can say that it forces Krishna to see with our own ideas.
No, but it's not a matter of force, because it's his determination that how you deal with him, that's how he'll deal with you.
Not force, but I'm saying maybe that the idea is that our own ideas about God we project on him, and he suits himself for that.
That's the masculine principle. He has to adjust with the feminine.
And when we say, okay, then we talk about Aropya. We put our own ideas into that.
Yes, but as long as you're doing that, then Krishna appears in that way. Right? Because different people are putting different things upon Krishna. Now, if you are following the footsteps of other leaders of the Vaishnavas, right, then you're going to have a whole different way that you're going to... Then you're going to have that mood that then you're going to see. So you're not projecting. See, because technically you're not projecting on Krishna, because Krishna does have all these forms. It's just which one you want to deal with. So it's not that he's forced to take these forms. It's he already has these forms. It's just which one that you see. He's unlimited. He has its original form. And if you want to worship him in that original state, then that mood that those of Braja have, then you'll see him in that form. If not, then you'll see him according to what you think he is. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just how you see them, that's how you do it. Just like, let's say, you know, it's not an uncommon thing, you see the sportsmen, right? And they're out there. Now, if they do, something goes really well, you know, they win, they get a point or something, you know, something exceptional kind of thing happens, then many of them you see, they point up in the sky and then they, you know, they tap their heart, their chest or something like that, or, you know, or some variety of that, that they're recognizing God. But so they only see God as the one who gives this excellence or how he should. That means the rest of the time they're playing, God's still there. You know what I'm saying? So they only see like that, so that's the only time they recognize. Otherwise, if things go bad, then they don't recognize them. When they go good, then they see. Or, in other words, when we get results we like, then we see God. When we get results we don't like, then we don't see. So therefore, he just comes how you see him. So it's not that it matters to him, or that he's lessened by it. It's not that, well, I'm seeing him this way, so therefore... Yeah. If there's any moisture on them, then the color comes out.
He's not biased,
and he's unaffected, so it doesn't matter to him. So that he is all those things. And so because he is those things, then therefore you are dealing with a form of him. But the point is that you only get the benefit of that particular worship. You won't get another benefit. Is that what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that if you just see him in one particular way, you know, is here, that as death, then that's all you can get from it, right? The others see him as the relative, others see him as, you know, the best of men. So that way then they will see that. Those who see him as the best of men, then they will see all his prowess and how, as the supreme male, how he deals and does everything perfectly. Does that make sense? So that's the form they'll see. Though he's one person, that's the thing. He is one, he's non-dual. But he has all these unlimited features, right? Three prominent features, but unlimited features. Just like his energies are three prominent energies, but they're unlimited.
We want to worship Krishna the way bridge buses worship. That's the main idea.
Yes.
But on the way, because of our Mishra practice.
Because of the side ideas.
Unwelcome, but still. We do worship him, and we do see him in different ways.
And so he'll reciprocate according to those ways. So, we are seeing these ways in connection with him, then we get purified. And so then gradually, we're able to deal with him as Vraja Krishna. But the point is until we're purified, until we come to the point of appreciating that mood that they have, that surrender, and that's what we want. Right? Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Our relationship with Krishna is not developed yet to the point that we see his particular form, that you know, like an Ishta Devata.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what we worship is what is preached to us.
Yes.
Because as you mentioned previously, a certain position of the jiva wasn't, you know, revealed to anybody, so nobody really cared. And then the preaching came, and then everybody was very interested. And then, you know, it faded away, so, you know, people just came back to their, you know, normal material position.
Hmm.
So basically, it's not our own form, it's what is preached. That's what
we accept. But that's the form we want to see. So at one point, yes, that form becomes our form, but it's only our form as the form of the others.
Right.
Right? You know, it's just like, let's say you have someone who's a servant, and they're working in a aristocratic person's house.
Yeah.
So they have that identity that they're a servant of this house. right? So they'll identify with it, they'll see things, then they have that experience, but they never think it's technically my house. So like that. So the position that mood and that belongs to someone else isn't a problem. We identify with it, we follow in the footsteps of it, then we get that same benefit. That's why the analogy is given of iron and fire. Because for the jiva, that's what it is. The jiva, in this case, is the iron, right? In the contaminated state. Then they can be in the fire of the internal potency. Then they become like fire. So then it's the same. You don't make differences. It's not in the spiritual world that the internal potencies hang out with themselves and the jivas hang out together, and, you know, stuff like that. You don't have that kind of, you know, so it's divided who's favorable to Radharani, who's not, who's neutral, you know, who's in the different relationships. That's what's seen. But what energy they are, that's not seen. Does that make sense? So when we're in that fire, then it becomes the same. You know, it's like that verse. Is it premanjana? It means that they're permeated with that love that Srimati Radharani has.
Premanjana chuta bhakti yojana.
So that's the point, is that it permeates. So we have to become an instrument. So an instrument means we can be used in that particular way. We can be engaged in that particular way. So then we actually see the same thing. It's just like our experience, we're cooking. So the experience we are seeing and our interaction with the vegetable in the pot and the spoon with the vegetable in the pot is the same. Right? So that's the whole point, is then we're involved like that. But in that, then when we say, oh, but then we're behind, but at the same time, as who's touching the subject? The spoon. So that's the whole point, is that if you take that position of behind, then you're in front. And if you try to take the position of you're in front, you're behind. Right? So that's the thing, is that we're thinking that it should be in a particular way. Right? It's just like, give the example. Okay, you have a bunch of girls, okay? And they want to do a drama. You know, they make up a drama. And in that drama, of course, there'll be some, you know, chivalry, some romance, some all those different things, right? So to do that, then they'll have to be girls and they'll have to be boys. So some of the girls will take the role of the boys and some of the girls will take the role of the girls, right? Now, in that kind of role play, then how exaggerated is the masculine position? Very exaggerated, right? And because it's so exaggerated, then the feminine can be so exaggerated. And that's the fun, right? So then we have to understand is that's how we see the masculine position. That's where the problem is. Because in actual reality, is it like that? You understand? So that's the whole point, is we have an idea. So there, that girl who's being the masculine, then she'll do all the right role play that is appropriate for the masculine-feminine interaction. That will all be there perfectly done. But who's the center of attention? You understand? That girl who's playing the masculine role is playing the leading role. And the girl is playing the female role, is taking the secondary role. But at the same time, is they're doing all, saying all the things and all the movements and facial expressions and words and tones of voice are all properly, exactly right. Because girls know how they want to be dealt with. You understand? So that's the problem. We think we're the center of attention and we're, you know, control. But the point is it doesn't work like that. If you're the center of attention, it's got to be about the other person. If you're in control, it's about the other person. Then it's balanced. Otherwise, it's just all one side. Does that make sense? You know, it ends up like that. That pizza we told about. That Maharaj was in Italy, and they brought him a pizza. Now, Italians especially, they just put a little bit. You know, they have the bread, they put the sauce, and then they cut up the mozzarella in chunks and put it here and there on the piece. You know, so it's you know, there's a lot of space in between. And that'll be standard, you know, because for them it's about the bread. You know, and then the bread has something on it. You know, like you have a piece of bread and put some butter on it or some jam on it. It's about the bread. So for them, it's about the bread. But for Americans, no, the bread is what holds up the cheese. Like that. Because otherwise, how do you eat the cheese? You know, it would just fall apart. But if you have it on that bread, then you can eat it, right? That's the whole point. So therefore, a ridiculous amount of sauce and cheese, right? And so therefore, the deep dish pizza, which is, you know, you can't get that much on a pizza unless you use the deep dish, right? Okay, so the home of the deep dish is where this devotee was from. So then he asked for more cheese. And so they do have a concept of more cheese. Some people do like a little bit more. So then they put that little bit more according to their standard. And they brought it back out. And he says, come on, you know, a little more than that. So they thought, okay, Americans. They put a little bit more how they thought was a little bit more. Right? They brought it out. He says, this is not cheese. Yeah, don't you know what cheese is? Then they took it back in the kitchen. And then the block, you know, because they come in big blocks, the mozzarella, they just took that and stuck it in the middle of the pizza. You know, melted a little bit, you know, so it's still the big block. Then brought that out. Then he kind of understood. So that's what we're talking about here, is that we have this idea of what's masculine and what's in control and what's enjoyer, but it's totally out of balance. You know? So then that becomes the problem.
Mm-hmm. But according to what we said before, that Krishna, he adjusts.
He adjusts, but the point is he adjusts for, that's it, you know? But I mean, how much do you see of what's there? How much can you appreciate? Yeah, so that's the point is, as you surrender, he reciprocates. But because you're interacting with him, we're getting purified. And if at the same time we're getting purified, we're trying to take shelter of the advanced devotees, right? You know, take advantage of the descriptions given by the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Acharya and Srila Prabhupada and the purports and all these. Then we see that this is something to endeavor for. In other words, by connecting it to Krishna, you will be purified. One doesn't have to worry about that. But the problem is that if you want to develop love for Krishna, then there must be that positive effort. Right? In other words, if we just connected to Krishna, that will bring us to the point of liberation. And it'll be so much easier than what the Mayavadis and them have to go through to try to get liberated. Right? Because Krishna is the source. He is Mukunda. But if you want to develop love for Krishna, then there has to be that positive aspect of actually desiring to develop love for Krishna as the Brajbasis develop. You know? Does that make sense? In another context, we could say is that by chanting Nama Bas, you'll get liberated. But by Shuddha Nam, then you'll get Prema. Right? So what's the difference? It's in the attitude. It's not that the name's different or somehow or another those in Shuddha Nam chant differently and all that kind of thing, you know. You can tell by the rhythm they chant, oh, that's Shuddha Nam, you know, like that, or something like that, or, you know, what kind of beads they have, or, you know, no, it's the attitude. Like that. Yes.
Right in the beginning, we struggle with the anarthas, and we see everything black and white. And then our vision develops, and then, as you mentioned, we actually able intellectually and philosophically to connect some of the anarthas and engage them in devotional service, although they're still there.
Yes.
And then we become kind of, you know, it's part of my nature. We don't feel very bad or guilty about it. And we just, you know, forget about it. We just live with it. And then, you know, we continue our devotional service. So is that like a hypocrisy or...
No, it just means that it's just moving at a slower pace. You know, where it's not as dynamic as it could be, but it's connected to Krishna and we're consistent in connecting it, because consistency is very important. Then with time we'll get purified to the point where we'll start to have a doubt about this anartha. See, because engaging the anartha, there's two aspects that are there. The engagement's not the anartha. It's the attitude. So as we get purified, the attitude starts to become less strong. So at some point, then we start to notice that what's the point of this attitude. So it doesn't mean that we necessarily change the activity, unless the activity is not actually important. We're doing it because we want to do it, not that it's part of our duty or it needs to be done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's our own attachment.
Yeah. But so that might be given up. But things that are, you know, our duties and therefore are the engagement of the nature, those don't need to be given up. Right? So therefore all that happens is that the attitude changes. So it's not that the activity changes, the attitude changes. Does that make sense? So as we become purified, that becomes more clear. So it's just a matter of time. But now if we're more focused on it, it'll speed the process up. Why? Because then you're thinking more of Krishna, so therefore, and that's the goal, therefore Krishna being pleased, things will move quicker. But if we've just connected to him, even if it's just on, we're just plodding along, then that's nice. Otherwise, why are Brahmins considered dear to the Lord? Because they follow the laws of Krishna very nicely. They're trying to be detached and all that. You know, so that they do all that nicely, then they become very, very dear. They'll live it, they'll speak about it, they'll train others in it. And so even that position, if it's steady, then it's pleasing. Does that make sense? So like that, because that's the positive position or the favorable position to be in. Now, the more you see it connected to Krishna, to please Krishna as a person, the more it moves forward. It'll move forward slowly. It'll move to the point where then it'll become obvious, well, maybe I have to think about this. But if you're trying to think about it, then it'll just make it quicker. But it's not an artificial, separate contemplation. It's in connection with the duties you're already doing. Right? It doesn't require a separate thing. It's not that, oh, I'm going to get serious about devotional service. So, you know, it's a different activity. No, it's just a matter of we're going to be more serious about trying to about the sadhana and, you know, the direct activities and the indirect seeing in connection to Krishna. So we just try more. And Krishna reciprocates. If we take one step, he'll take 10. But he'll take the 10 if we take the 1. You know? And so especially when it comes to this aspect of giving up material desire, and that, then we have to make that endeavor that we want to give up the material desire. Does that make sense? Because even you remove the anarthas, the inherent point of I'm the controller and enjoyer will still remain. Because that's a determination. So even the heart is purified, but when we give that up, then that anartha nivritti is actually complete. Right? So there's the anarthas that we have from this life or previous lives. Then there's the anartha of just trying to be the controller and enjoyer. So that's the one we focus on, but we'll apply it into whatever situation we're in, the particularities of what we're dealing with now. So.
Because when Krishna appears on the arena, some people, as it is described, they see him according to their relationship.
Yes.
But some see according to their own anartha, and it's the same person.
Yes.
That's why I'm Bhagavan Krishna.
Yes.
They see him completely different.
Yes, because he manifests to them differently. It's just the mood. It's just like, okay, even in our general context, somebody that we may see that we are, you know, are very favorable towards, seeing them we become inspired, that someone else that may have some difficulty with them standing next to us, seeing them then is not very inspired. So it's, what does the person mean to you? Yes, so that's how, because Krishna is everything, so therefore then you can see him in all these different ways. But then there's those that are positive, that are devotional. Right? There's that which is pious and that which is devotional. So we see here some are seeing in the demoniac, some in the pious, and some in the devotional. And then within devotional you have the different flavors, or within piety, or within... Okay. So all those aspects are there, because in anything you have the secondary aspect, and you have the attitude of the secondary aspect, where the quality is being used. And then you have the devotional aspect. Like we see Krishna, he's doing an activity, but then his mood is playfulness. So the attitude is playfulness. Right? So it's there. Or he becomes angry, so different moods are there. So, but the activity doesn't necessarily change. That's one fight with Kuvalyapita. But the moods change the different things, so therefore you get different flavors. So you have an active knowledge and skills. You have the attitude, and then you have the devotion. So it has to be clear that the attitude is part of the secondary. Right? Because it's the form used. Because people can use those knowledge, those skills, and those attitudes and not be for Krishna. So the primary is actually that is to please Krishna. Then, to please Krishna, then you engage the secondary. Then that secondary is not considered material, it's spiritual. But if we use the same secondary but not to please Krishna, it's called material. So that makes the difference. Indra is a king. And you have the king of the demons is a king. They both do the same exact duties. They're following the same scriptures. But one is in pursuance of that it's the Lord's universe, so he's trying to run it in a way that's pleasing to the Lord. And the demon is how they can please themselves. Yeah. So this attitude is all part of the secondary. It's the subtler. You can say within, because it's a formula that comes from Krishna, and that means that as Krishna pervades everything, that formula pervades everything. So even we take it to the secondary, we can find a primary and secondary within the secondary. Right? And we take either that primary or secondary, and we can see like that. So you can always keep going like that. Does that make sense? The more you know a subject, the more you can apply the formula to deeper and deeper levels. Right? So... But the principle still remains. Is that okay? So therefore we have to see is that the knowledge, the skill, they aren't inherently spiritual. They're Krishna, but they aren't inherently that we're seeing. Only when we see him connected to Krishna do we get the spiritual benefit. They're already Brahman as it is. It's not that we make Krishna spiritual or material. He's already Brahman. It's whether we are on the material platform or not. Right? And then we have the qualities. Now in the material, at least the non-Vedic environment, specifically, then qualities are considered spiritual. But no, these are the qualities in which we define the activity that we're doing. Right? What's the intent? Right? Someone's doing an activity, then, we don't like the activity. But when we see the intent was actually had a good purpose, then we can adjust with it. Right? But that doesn't make it spiritual still. It's only that devotion that it's for Krishna that it becomes spiritual. So that has to be constant. Otherwise, how is it always spiritual? Means I go to work, I do my job, I have not one nanosecond do I think of Krishna. But at the end of the week when I get my paycheck, I take that money and I use it in Krishna's service. So in that way it's all connected. But at the time it's not connected. So as long as we keep that the goal is for Krishna, then the others becomes connected because of that. But it's you get the benefit when it happens. Right? So that's renunciation. Sannyas means I'm doing this work to please Krishna. because then I get this result that can be used for Krishna. Therefore, I'm doing the work in such a way that'll please Krishna. So I want to see, okay, if I want to get money, then what's the best way to deal and act that I get the best money? Or I keep the money as stable as possible. So then I'm doing that because it's used for Krishna. Rather than just, I feel like it, so I'm doing, or I want to move up, so I do nicely, or I don't care, so I don't do nicely. You know, but at the end, then it's offered to Krishna, so it's renunciation. So the attitude being connected to Krishna and the activity being connected to Krishna, there is a difference. It is considered more advanced. So when there's one may be stable in the secondary form, but we're also, so that's a good point, that's a good first step, but we're also trying to become stable in the primary form, that it's for Krishna. Does that make sense? So if that's understood, then we can balance it nicely. Otherwise, you get the thing of, you know, like, let's say, for us, wearing a dhoti and like that is, we would identify that as Vaishnav Chinna. Means things that identify as a Vaishnav, because who else is wearing that except us on the street? You can say as no, but all properly pious Hindus will wear the same dress we wear. Yes, for them it's not Vaishnav Chinna. For them it's just piety. But for us, the only reason we have it is because of the Vaishnav element. Right? So now if we just take that, oh, see, it's not Vaishnav, so it doesn't matter. So then I can wear anything, then we've missed the whole point. Because the point is that wearing it, even if we don't consider it Vaishnav Chinna, it's pious. And piety is given by Krishna, and piety is what's engaged in Krishna's service. That's first class. Then as piety is not available, then we might offer some other things. But we wouldn't, if it's available, why would we choose something else? You know, you can get the first class vegetable, but instead you choose the ones that are falling apart and old and rubbery. You know, because it's, you know, because you could offer it to Krishna. Yeah, technically you can. But will there not be a reduction in our benefit when we have the opportunity to offer first class and we don't, because we're used to the rubbery ones? You know, I figure I'm doing something because I got to cut out half the cauliflower, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point is, but if someone is trying to do the first class that pleases Krishna, then that's the whole point. Because pleasing someone else means doing something for someone else. This whole modern concept of, no, you have to be natural, you have to be true to yourself, you know, you have to be, you know, this and that, it's about yourself. Yes, that's called self-centered, that's called anamoya. We try to cover it and make it look like something glorious by saying, you know, bringing everybody into it and this and that, using nice words. We try to pawn it off as pranamoya, but actually it's anamoya. Because technically pranamoya is just extended anamoya. Just we include others. But nowadays it's like everybody should be doing these things, but I can do whatever I like. And so this is really not going to work together. You know? Everybody just does what they like at the same time as, you know, they have to follow the rule. So if you like the person, then it's about them. If you don't like the person, it's about the group. You know? So then, and who defines that? Yourself. So then actually, is it pranamoy? It's actually just anamoy. You're just trying to put a veneer on it. Therefore, it comes down to actually just the sophisticated anamoyist. Right? Because generally we talk about sophisticated as being pranamoy, but there is this sophisticated anamoyist. You know, like the connoisseur and this and that. That they're actually just anamoy. Just that they're very scientific or, you know, good in art and that about themselves. It's about themselves. So they're into good eating or good dining because of themselves, not because of others. It's not that they're trying to give that to others and cooperate with others. No, it's about themselves. So we have to be careful, though. It looks like it. It's sophisticated. So, well, it has the sophisticated thing. It has, you know, some good qualities. It's sophisticated. So therefore, it must be spiritual. But we've dropped down to anamoy. We're not even talking pranamoy anymore. Because pranamoy means everybody has to do it. Anamoy means everybody else has to do it. Does that make sense? So we see is that the because of lack of understanding the Vedic version, therefore the modern actually can't give you, it's like, you know, like the example given, trying to cross the ocean holding the tail of a dog. So we're not going to get very far, you know. Even when you get a big dog, it's still not going to get anywhere. Is that?
In regard to go back to the verse when I was describing how different people see Krishna in different ways, I was just wondering.
So you thought we weren't talking on the verse? Not if we can get back to the verse. Okay, no.
So, is the standard process of revelation something like this, that by hearing and hearing, you identify with a certain form of Krishna, you have some attraction feeling and a desire to please that form of Krishna, and you intensify your meditation on that form until at some point, some mysterious point, Krishna feels, okay, now I can actually also, I mean, he's reciprocating from the very beginning, from the first time you chant Hare Krishna, but then there's a point where now Krishna...
Well, he's reciprocating even before you chant Hare Krishna. Because he's in your heart, so...
Ah, yes, it's from...
It's just like, what is the form of Krishna for Big Daddy Warbucks? Right?
Yeah.
So that's the meaning, you know. A war and money, you know, so it's like, you know, can't get better than that, right?
He's always reciprocating,
but then now, because up to there, it's never him personally. Mm-hmm. It's always him in his features of Brahman and Paramatma. But when we take up chanting, we come in contact with the devotees, then it's the personal. So what made the difference between Brahman and Paramatma and Bhagavan? What made the difference in how Krishna is dealing with us? Devotees. So therefore, you have to carry that all the way through. So there's never a time where it's just me and Krishna. Right? That's the weakness in, like, let's say, Mirabai. Because she's got this, she was more devotional, but then by association with Tulsidas, who's an impersonalist, then she started looking at more that just me and Krishna and things like that. Because they just see, okay, this is the supreme, so how I see Krishna, how I deal with Krishna. No, it's how we deal with the devotees who are dealing with Krishna, because we don't see Krishna. Right? Braja Krishna, what are we going to see? Yeah, so therefore, Braja Krishna, that mood, that is seen by Srimati Radharani. That mood of Braja Krishna, that's how she sees Krishna. That's the natural, inherent form she sees. Because he's the complete whole, she's the complete counterpart. And so, that aspect of that, you know, oneness, that sweetness, that closeness, that's Braja Krishna. Then, to taste that in its variety of ways, then she expands the energy, you know, to please Krishna, so that all the five rasas are there, the dham is there, the paraphernalia, all the different aspects can be done. So in other words, Braj means it's about Radharani seeing Krishna. So now, we don't have a connection with Radharani, so therefore, she's a complete whole. We have to connect with those who are connected with her. Therefore, dasan or dasan or das, like this.
So is it when our link with the line is...
Yes. In other words, when it's about our acharyas, not about what's trending in the modern, the politically correct environment, that's not going to get you into Braj. You know? I would not want to speculate where that will get you. You know? So it's when it's the acharyas say this is what's important. Prabhupada said this is what's important. Not that, yes, Prabhupada said the times have changed, and, you know, and he said we have to use our intelligence, and all ways of just trying to say we're not going to listen to this authority, we're just going to do whatever we want. And doing whatever we want because we're a devotee. We accept Prabhupada as, you know, the spiritual platform. That makes us a devotee. But we're following our own dictates of our own needs. And because we're a devotee, then naturally that's spiritual. Therefore, I need the modern context of political correctness and social interaction. And so therefore that becomes spiritual. And now that I'm doing it, everybody has to do it, otherwise they're not being spiritual. Right? But that's not going to get anyone anywhere. Because it's not about Krishna, it's not about these devotees, it's about ourselves. And we're, you know, fine, pious enough that we're connected to the line, we're devotees, but the point is it's not considered stable because we're not stable in that commitment to the acharyas. Vyavasayatmika buddhi is given in connection with, focused on the instruction of the acharya. That's vyavasayatmika buddhi. That's the intelligence we're looking for. And if that's there, then that's good. If we're vyavasayatmika buddhi on political correctness and, you know, all these different things like that, that's not what Vishwanath's talking about. You know, that's the difficulty. So it's that we have to, even when push comes to shove, it's got to be where are we standing? You know, like that. Because it does matter.
And what you attain in this...
I say, Braja lives matter.
That's very good.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Yes? Okay. All forms of Bhagavan are not worshipped or realized by all. Each form is attained only by qualified persons, since he is infinite in form and not suitable for all. In Vedanta Sutras, it is established that one can take qualities of the Lord mentioned in different scriptures in order to know a particular form. Therefore, it is said, quote, a person worships a particular form of the Lord according to his choice. One can gather qualities of that form from different scriptures, right? So that's what the acharyas have done. This Nana Shastra Vichara and I can even know. They've gone through all the Vedic literature and brought out all those qualities that we can appreciate that Krishna has, right? And then showing how he has all those qualities in Braj, and then how as he expands into other forms and other pastimes, how then the qualities adjust. And then what the demigods have, what the jiva has, like this. So they've done that. They've gone through. You know, we don't have to go through and find. We have to follow in their footsteps. That's the point, is that as we follow in their footsteps, Krishna is pleased. Like that. Because point is this, is Braja, how big is Braja Krishna? How much is he of the complete whole?
100%.
And we're 1/10,000th of the tip of the hair. How much is that of unlimited? Not a whole lot. So therefore, unless, as we said, iron and fire, then only we have the capacity to add something to that fire. But we're adding to the fire. So it's by the grace of the fire that we're in the fire and we can add something to the fire. Yes?
In the story of Gopkumar, he spends quite some time at each realm.
Yeah.
He seems to be very comfortable worshiping that particular, you know, Krishna deity,
yeah,
and chanting his own mantra.
Mm-hmm.
But then after some time, he feels that he has to move on. So, although he doesn't know what it is exactly, but his inner drive pushes him, you know, all the way up to go along.
Mm-hmm.
So, is this is an example that Sanatana Goswami gives to us, or how should we take it?
Means whatever form of Krishna we're attracted to, then that aspect we put in the proper effort. But the point is that ultimately there is the natural position that the living entity will function from. So depending upon the desire of the living entity. So here Sanatana Goswami shows that because they're all expansions of Krishna, they're all wonderful. But at the same time, is there's a special wonderfulness in Krishna, in Braj, that you don't have. There's those four qualities that he doesn't manifest in these other forms. Not that he doesn't have them, but he doesn't manifest them. And that we're talking about, even in the... Paraveshti?
Paravasta.
That on a lecture in Bombay about on Ramachandra appearance day, Prabhupada's making the point that Ramachandra, he's 100% Bhagavan. He has all the qualities, all the 64 qualities, but he doesn't play the flute. But he's fully has all the 64 qualities. Well, but he still doesn't do. But like Narayana, then he only will have those 60 qualities. That's all he'll manifest. But it's not that he can't play the flute, like we see with Gopal Kumar. He does get out his flute and start playing it. So then it's because it's Krishna who's doing that. It's just that the mood changes where he has them but doesn't use them, and where he actually acts in a way as if he doesn't have them. Though any form of Krishna has. Is it this?
Yeah.
So Sanatana Goswami is showing us that we may be attracted by, but we should always keep in mind the aspects of attraction to Krishna. So since that's given, then the focus then is on Krishna. But then from that focus on Krishna, then any other pastime we hear, we see that in relationship to Krishna.
So when Srila Prabhupada says it's time to boil the milk, does that mean a kind of getting the devotees, now that we've accomplished the secondary very well, now try to fix on the primary, which is trying to always please Krishna and becoming attracted to a particular form? That's what it means to boil the milk.
Yes. So up to that point where he's always saying double it and increasing, then when it got to that point where he says now boil the milk, means that's the level he found this, that's good for the society to run at for the devotees that are there. You know, especially Americans, if it doesn't run at that kind of level, it doesn't keep them busy. You know what I'm saying? Like, it keeps a lot to keep an American actually fully engaged in a conversation and activity without looking at their phone and texting. Right? So that kind of intensity, then Prabhupada's saying, now we're at that intensity. So now, try to switch to... It means those activities go on. Now, put a prominence on trying to appreciate and understand what's pure devotional service and move forward in that. But if you simply identify devotional service as the secondary, then that either doesn't mean anything to you, or you'll find that is the difficult thing. You know, because we're used to applying the secondary, not the primary. And so, therefore, since the primary is just a feeling and a mood like that, so that's not a big deal. But this other, it takes knowledge and skill and endeavor, so it's so much more. But that's the point. It's what's the highest in the spiritual then looks the lowest here. Because people will say, yes, that's just mood. That we catch. What about the technique? What are we going to do? But the point is if you don't have that mood, what's the point of it? That's why it said that it's just a waste of time. So the point is yes, we're ultimately doing for Krishna, so it's not a total waste of time. But how much more we could get?
Generally, people give up halfway, like, you know, the Bhava Rupa, the Chishta Rupa, like the inner external manifestation of, like, expression.
But that's because if that's cultivated, that's why you associate with those who are more advanced to cultivate that.
Right.
But that means then there must be a focus on senior devotees, how you say, spending time together. At what point do you see senior devotees together? Right. Means we'll see here at the GBC meeting, is there any time outside of that to associate with the devotees? Not really. Then let's say we have a kirtan mela or some other mela and all that, then they'll be together at that thing, but outside of that, then they hardly associate. So when do devotees see this association? When do they get that association? Because there's no focus on it, because it's about organizing, it's about skills, it's about that. Knowledge. So that's all that it is there. And knowledge means skilled knowledge, not this kind of knowledge. Not primary knowledge. So individuals, they themselves may do. And they have very nice association. They put a lot of emphasis on that. And so But as a general flavor, that's not necessarily appreciated. But that's the beauty of the system, since it's about individuals taking part in a structure. Therefore, the individual, despite everybody else, can perform all the necessary activities in advance, even if nobody else is. That's the beauty of devotional service. Bhakti being independent, it's not dependent on anything else. Well, we're saying, no, the more we have these knowledge and skills, then bhakti will be going better. One, that's saying bhakti is dependent on karma, and that karma actually improves the quality of bhakti. That we see the acharyas again and again make the point that it's not like that. So we should not, due to our own conditioning, think the secondary is important and being professional is important, because we have to remember is that that wasn't always the case, that being a professional was important. I think maybe people started hitting that when they're in their 30s or 40s or 50s. Because when they were young, being a hippie and being stupid was the focus. Yeah, so that's new, that's imposed. So when they say we're being natural, no, you're not. You know, let your hair down, put a ring of daisies in your hair and do a circle dance, you know, like that. Now that's natural. But if they're not doing that, they're sitting in a meeting and all that, that is absolutely not natural. Like that. The millennials, okay, they can get away with it. But everybody else, forget it. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. In the commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 10:43:17, it is said, "The Lord, who is a form of all rasas, manifests according to individual desire." Since He is rasa, that's why then you can see anything you want. It's just like if you have a supermarket, what does somebody see in the supermarket? Right? What they need. They don't see anything else. But the supermarket has everything. So Krishna, being rasa, He's the ocean of rasa. You just see what aspect of rasa that you want. And He'll reciprocate on that. It is said, "The Lord, who is the form of all rasas, manifests according to individual desire. He does not reveal all forms to all." This means that persons who know the Supreme Truth do not have all knowledge. That is reasonable, since such a person does not realize the special sweet qualities of the Lord. However, the realizers of the Lord's sweetness will realize all knowledge about the Lord according to the circumstance, although all knowledge is not of much interest to them, preferring only the sweetness. Right? So they will know the Lord, they'll know all aspects of the Lord, but they only prefer that aspect with sweetness. Like you see the gopis, constantly in their prayers they're talking about Him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like that. So, but they prefer only the sweetness aspect. So it's not that they don't have all that knowledge. It's just that it's not actually very attractive to them. It's not of much interest. Not that they don't know it, it's not of, just not of much interest. Does that make sense? Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates. So, it's not that we don't know all these things, but our interest is then in serving Krishna in Vrindavan. That's what's being offered. But all the other realms, everything is being known. But that makes it even more, is that if you can compare, then this is more sweet, then it makes it more nice. So it's not a problem that all these other aspects of are known. Right? Because it's a comparison. Yeah? Yeah. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates. Sridhar Swami says that here Krishna is described as the conglomeration of all rasas, since He is both the cause of rasa and its effect. Shruti says, "Raso vai saha rasam ye vayam labdhanandi bhavati." The Lord is rasa, and attaining that rasa, one attains bliss. Footnote 17. The meaning of the word rasa is described as follows by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Quote, "That which is properly relished within the perfectly purified heart, imbued with full-blown pure goodness, or stai bhava, when the path of ordinary understanding is transcended, and which has as its foundation an immensity of wonder, is called rasa."
It's good that we have
yes, otherwise then Yeah, in other words, putting more ketchup, we'd say, this is rasa. Yeah, that's as far as we get. Okay. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. The particulars are as follows. The wrestlers, who were proud, thinking themselves the best of warriors, became very angry because Krishna, whose limbs were like thunderbolts, and acted with disregard, disrespecting those who were also like thunderbolts, and in this state entered the arena. So in other words, he didn't like come in and very nice and all you got. He just had his elephant tusk on his shoulder and walked in as if it's, you know, just them. You know, these other guys, what does it matter? Where's their elephant tusk, you know? We don't see any elephant tusk, you know, so therefore, you know, you come in a nice clean dress, we're already coming spattered with blood. We already killed the elephant out there. What did you do before you walked into the arena, right? So then they feel they're being disregarded, so they become angry. So here it says wrestlers, because in the modern, wrestlers are, it's either a sport or it's a sport. Right, it's either the modern wrestling or the, what is it, the Greco wrestling, or even if we get a little bit further, then you have the, you know, the mixed martial arts. So then that, but it's still a sport a little bit more. But what we're talking about here is this is the wrestling means. This is the war techniques of hand to hand combat. That's what wrestling means in the Vedic. Right? You can wrestle without going that far. So it includes all the grappling and all the things, but it includes the punching, the kicking, the grappling. So in other words, you know, the MMA, that goes back to here. That's Vedic. Only now they're starting to figure it out. Like that. And they would also use sometimes hand things, you know, like the, you've seen the brass knuckles? You know, brass knuckles. No one knows brass knuckles. They're these brass things that they're the solid brass that go around your knuckles and have points in the front. And they have a thing inside, you know, for pushing on the hand so that you can give a good punch. So that's the modern thing. The Vedic ones actually on the top and bottom, you know, at the, you know, going at the ends of them going up and down, they have spikes, and those spikes aren't just single spikes. They're a spike that has three, it's like three blades that go into one. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's one of the standard wrestling weapons. So you can punch, you can, you know, kick, you can stab, you can, you know, like that. So that's on the battlefield or something like that in the fight. We see it's with Bhima and Jarasandha, then they just wrestled, you know, freehand. You know, they didn't have weapons. So then that was the, you know, because they're strong, so why use weapons? That was their whole thing. It's just, you know, that's the fun. You know, or if they did start with that, they would use the weapons, but then the weapons become destroyed, so there's no weapons. So then they would just then do the wrestling like that. Does that make sense? Because it's just they're so strong.
The
conch stand.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Think all kinds of funny things.
Does it mean that it was like usual to fight to death on such a match?
Not necessarily. But I'm saying the technique is one that you could take to. Because the modern, it doesn't. You know, you might end up with a broken arm or something. But here it's that it's actually, the technique is that you could kill the other person. Or, for sport, you just do it less. So in other words, the Vedic doesn't have something that's just a sport and it ends there. It means it's actually a martial art that may be used as sport. In this case, then Kamsa wanted them to kill Krishna. Does that make sense?
In Mahabharata, there is one episode when in Virata's palace, while Pandavas was in Virata's, Bhima fight with somebody in such a match, and he killed him.
Yeah, it may happen. And you know, especially it depends on how they deal. They're wrestlers, so it happens. Huh? Well, Kichak, that was a little bit more than a standard wrestling.
That's after.
Huh?
That's after.
Yeah. Oh, after that. Yeah, because he was there. So it just depends on what's the situation. Okay, so enter. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Parinamani.
Thursday, Friday?
Yes, Thursday.
And then next day, yes.